Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today I'm joined by Linda K. Burton, who is the Relief Society General President. It's a pleasure to have you. I'm excited to learn from you today.
Well, that's why I came to learn from you.
Well, then this is a good thing because we'll all learn together. I think that's right. Always a great setting. We also have Sister Cheryl A. Esplin, who is the second counselor in the Primary General Presidency. Welcome, Sister Esplin.
Oh, thank you. It's just fun to come and talk about subjects like this and the gospel, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I agree. I think that this is the nice part about gospel settings is it brings individuals together who have a purpose in mind, which I believe is actually to become more like our Father in heaven in every way. And with that goal or purpose in mind, then we can talk of ways to be able to accomplish that. And I think, as Paul would have said, we are no more strangers but fellow citizens in Christ. And I'm grateful for that opportunity where we can learn from each other and from experiences that others are having. So this is going to be great. Now, with the topic that we're going to be talking about today, we'll be discussing understanding and strengthening affection in marriage and family living. That is a mouthful. That's a lot to say right there. So if we're to look at this, I hope we can frame this in an appropriate way, because when you say words like affection, intimacy in marriage and family, that might raise eyebrows from some that say, what are you going to actually talk about? And so I thought it would be helpful if we frame this topic, because this is a critical, essential topic within any type of relationship, especially that of family and within marriage. Let's talk a little bit about the context of affection. When we say affection or intimacy, what comes to mind, or how would you talk about that in a way that would help individuals to increase the relationship in their marriage and family? Affection and intimacy.
I like the word in intimacy, that you're letting people into your life in a sweet way. The world would have us have that distorted. But we're letting people into our lives because we are exposing ourselves in some way to show them that we love them enough to expose ourselves, I guess.
This is really good. As a matter of fact, I like the way that you say the world has distorted this. In some ways, it seems that the world takes words and either compacts them together, squishes them together, or changes the meaning altogether. And when we talk about intimacy, I love what you're saying is the whole essence of intimacy is allowing individuals inside, to allow them into our lives. And that's a risky business, I think.
Very risky.
And I think we've all had experience with that is maybe that's one of the reasons we don't see a lot of intimacy happening in the world or letting people in is because it's so risky or scary.
That's part of the process, though, isn't it?
Well, you know, what do you mean by part of the process? Because I think that you're right.
Well, I'm thinking especially of maybe young single adults. You know, sometimes we just leave people out because it is such a risk. But part of the process in learning to let people into your life is being hurt. I mean, being hurt and it's like the opposites. You know, there's an opposition in all
right.
things. And if we want to know love, we sometimes have to know the opposite of that. And not necessarily that it's hate, but you know what I mean? It's just
I like this
read my mind.
No, I think that this is really good. As a matter of fact, when you say read my mind is just racing because you're bringing up really great ideas here as a process of learning. I think that in some ways affection and the ability to allow intimacy to happen may be a skill in some sense. In other words, it's something we can learn. Is that a fair thing
there,
to say?
I think that's...
In fact, we all come into a marriage or a relationship bringing with us our life's experience, and sometimes they can be very different.
Sure.
And we do have to learn from each other what others like and what affection is to them.
That's really good because sometimes I hear this, oh, she's an affectionate person. Oh, he's just so affectionate, as if it's something that's a predisposition that they're born that way. And since I wasn't born that way, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm just not that way. And I think that that's a different context of the way the gospel is teaching, is we can actually become something and become more than what we think we are.
And as I think, as you said that, the image came to me when we talk about affectionate people, we usually associate that with physical.
That's right. And is so that begs the question, are there more ways to express affection than just a physical or the touching experience? I hear this all the time. Oh, they're just touchy-feely. Not that that's bad, nor am I saying that that's good, but maybe there are more ways that we should be looking at this to frame this topic.
I think Cheryl alluded to that in her last comment, what she was saying about learning from others and how they express affection. Is that where you're going with that?
Well, I do. I think that I remember talking to my sister one time, and she and her husband had just had this conversation about the language of love.
Right.
And she was saying that he asked her, so what's your language of love? And they started talking about this, and for him it meant buying her some lovely gift and showing his affection that way. And she said, do you know, for me, I just wish he'd cleaned the garage. She was overwhelmed, and to her, affection just meant, go clean the garage for me. And so it's different things at different times, and different people express it differently.
And that's important to understand. And I think that when we understand that it comes in different ways, then we can see it, maybe, or we can recognize it. We start to understand that. And then here's an important aspect where sometimes when you look at what's happening in the research or in family models, is they say, okay, we understand and we recognize it, but they fail to say, and now we implement it. Now we take our understanding, our recognition, and we appropriately implement that into our lives. And so when we mix families together as in a marriage, when you take two individuals together and then you add children on that, boy, the mix can be a little complicated, but it's really quite exciting because you start to learn about individuals, say, oh, so this is what happens.
You bet. That's so, so right. I'm thinking of a daughter in particular that came after a son that was affectionate in a much different way than she was, but trying to figure out what language communicated with her best was totally different than his. I'm thinking of, you know, he would come in and want to talk, which seems unusual for a boy, I guess. But that's how he downloaded and connected. Hers was completely opposite. She didn't do that. But I caught on to her one time, and I learned that when she came in the door, if I would busy myself doing something, she'd start to talk. It was when I looked at her.
Oh, really?
That for some reason, mm-hmm. She wouldn't talk. But she would open up. But once I learned that, isn't that weird?
And you know, with my sons, none of them were really talkers, but I found they loved to have their backs rubbed. And so if I would slip down after an evening and just before they went to bed and start rubbing their backs, they would just talk and open up and express the deepest feelings of their heart because they loved to have their backs rubbed.
That's so good. And this is what I love, what I'm hearing here is if we can recognize and understand that there are many different ways to approach this, then we start to see that affection and intimacy really are available to every individual. We just need to learn about this. And so when individuals say, oh, she's so affectionate, that may be true, but that doesn't mean others are not. Maybe we're not recognizing that appropriately. Now, Linda, you brought up a really great point at the very beginning when you said you loved about intimacy as being in. I mean, that's the actual definition. The English word comes from the Latin intimus, which simply means in or innermost. And I don't want to make a big deal of this, but what I really like about that is it's the superlative. It's not just in. Is when you talk about real intimacy, it's not even just inner, it's innest. I don't know if you can say that. I don't even know how to make it as a superlative as it's supposed to be. But that is actually, I think, the real goal is to allow individuals into our lives in a way where they know us. They come to know us. And the means to that is actually affection. It's the affection. So in the world we live in today, they usually cause affection and intimacy to be one and the same word. They make it synonymous when in truth, affection, by definition, and I just like the definition of affection, it's an external manifestation or representation of a feeling or emotion. And so this is a way that we show what we're feeling, we manifest what we're feeling, in many different ways, which I'd like to explore. But the outcome of showing that is not the end. I show what I'm feeling so that people can come into my life and I into theirs. And so affection is the means to intimacy. Does that make sense?
Yes.
In fact, I was reading in that little pamphlet called A Parent's Guide as I prepared to come, and it said one of the deepest forms of intimacy is experienced in the sharing of spiritual experiences and desires.
Whoa. So now we were just talking about back scratching or rubbing, and now we're talking about spiritual intimacies. And I think that that's so important to bring up because that is a critical element when we talk about the appropriate element of letting people in. Mm-hmm. And so that would say there are spiritual affections too.
I'm thinking of two instances that bear that out. One especially is when my husband and I go to the temple. One of our favorite things to do is sit in the celestial room and just whisper, What did you feel? What did you learn today? And we try to be so quiet that we don't disturb anybody else, but letting each other into that thought process is really one of the most sacred things we do. And now I've forgotten the other one, so I'll just leave it with that for right now.
You know, what you're bringing up is so nice. I like this. Is some people would not consider, if they witnessed that opportunity, they would probably not say, oh, that was a lot of students at the university call it PDA, public displays of affection. They may not even see that in that category, but yet it is a very affectionate and intimate experience, is that whispering that goes on.
That's true. Whispering alone is something special.
And that's a nice thing, is sometimes when you whisper, it focuses attention, et cetera. I think of my own children, and I as children are growing up, I love it when they're very young. They seem to have very thin filters on expressing affection and letting people in.
Oh,
it's amazing of how quickly they allow anyone.
That's true.
I mean, they meet people on the street and they're instantly friends. Hi, you want to know more about me?
Yeah.
Intimacy is very thin. Maybe the veil is very thin with children. I don't know. But I like to see how that takes place, and they're so affectionate in whatever it is to allow people to let them in and for them to come into their hearts. We can learn from children.
That's great.
Especially if we just take the time to have a one-on-one moment with them. You know, just take them in our arms and tell them how we feel. And
well, this is really good because I think I like what you were gesturing is you can't see what I see here, but Cheryl is using her hands, is moving them back and forth one-on-one, and I like what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and what I'm feeling on that. There's something about this connection part. You can't get around the one-on-one. By the same token, I think it's possible to be affectionate in group settings. I've had some really intimate affectionate experiences in family home evening, for example, when some people might be observing that and saying, oh my goodness, this family is out of control. Everyone is bouncing off the walls and ceilings, but really it's a very affectionate experience. But what's happening is whether it's 1-to-1, 1-to-2, 5-to-10, however this works, there is a connection that takes place that connects individuals together. That is affection, which brings an intimacy.
Yeah, and everybody feels it. Everybody in the group is feeling it. So it is one-on-one in that way.
That's right. So when we look at purposes of affection and purposes of intimacy, I'm hoping that we get a sense that this is a critical element to relationships. And I don't know if this would be fair, but I'd like to bring that up. The same token is, does our Father in Heaven model affection and intimacy? And if so, because He is the grand model, I believe we are trying to become like Him in every way. And the Savior models the Father in such wondrous ways that we see this interesting mentoring going on. Can you think, I know I'm putting you on the spot, think of ways of which our Father in Heaven actually models affection, that expression of His feeling that allows people to come closer to Him or more in with Him.
Go ahead, Linda.
I was just thinking of the one time that simple scripture, Jesus wept when He comes to Mary and Martha to raise Lazarus, and yet He wept. That's just so poignant to me.
I love that. Now, if we're going to be technical, and I would never want to be too technical about this, but when you're speaking, I thought, okay, we just gave the definition of affection, which was an outward expression or reflection of a feeling or emotion. So here we see Christ weeping. Now, I'm just going to pick your brains on this one because I know that you've had a lot of experience. What do you suppose, and I know this is interpretive, Christ was feeling in that moment? I mean, when it comes down to it, what was He feeling? Because this is dealing with Lazarus and with individuals of Mary and Martha. He comes, come on, that we see the affectionate, the outward response, and that is moving. But when we connect it with the feeling, I think then power starts to really come. Thoughts on that? What might he be feeling at that moment?
I think just deep love.
Oh, I'm thinking of the compassion for those that he loved too, that, you know, he realized their hurt and he felt what they were feeling because he knew them and loved them.
I love this. I mean, I think that you're right. Love is at the center and the core. For Christ knew what was going to take place. It was clear that he was in control of the situation, waiting for 3 days,
Absolutely.
Of the things. He knew Lazarus would come back, but yet when he gets there, he weeps, not necessarily, it seems, for the loss of Lazarus, but for the living. And what you're bringing up, I love this, is love and compassion, empathy, sympathy, weaving together, and it's manifest where it's unmistakable.
Right.
This is really beautiful. Other thoughts of how we see divine manifestations of affection and intimacy to model.
You know, I always think of whenever we hear the Father introduce his Son, "Behold, this is my beloved Son." Mm. You know, that word, just beloved. You just sense the love that he has for his Son. And then that always makes me feel like that's how he would feel about me.
I like this. I like this a lot. So words and not just expressing. I think that there's the first element is there is an expression for sure in that introduction. There is an expression. The words that were chosen to be used really convey that inward feeling. I think that that's so wonderful. Any other thoughts?
Another manifestation would be touch. I'm thinking of two instances, once where the Savior washed his disciples' feet and how intimate that setting was. And then when he appeared to the Nephites, when he asked them to come forward and touch his hands and his feet and his side, how intimate of a moment that must have been to let someone into your life like that, physically as well, just touching that.
I really like this. I think that this is a great experience when you start to see that. And I'm going to just build upon what you said with the washing of feet. So you have a combination going in some ways is you have that physical touch. And then also, I hope this will make sense, is it's a very affectionate experience in providing a service and serving others. And that did use touch as well, but there's something going on there that sometimes providing service can be one of the great elements of affection, and providing that service, actually, sometimes we forget this, it's not the service project or the experience of serving, but what it does is the outcome is actually intimacy, is we are connected now in a deeper way because we have served or received service. I think that's really
sweet.
Nice.
My husband made me a smoothie this morning.
Oh, there you go. Well, and I must say, as one of the sweet elements of beginning of this one as well, is watching your husband, Cheryl, is where you had some notes that you wanted to take place and walking him through of calling home and stuff. And I thought, you know, this is actually, we should be filming this because this is affection is really when it comes down to it, is this manifestation of inward feelings, and you can just feel it.
She even called him sweetie.
That's right. Well, you know, that's funny you bring that one up, is because sometimes as we're expanding this concept is using words and expression, sometimes I think we may not really recognize nicknames of what takes place in nicknames. Even in the scriptures, when you look at the experience, sometimes it's a language-based experience, but when we talk about Abba in the scriptures, is that's not just saying Father. That's a very intimate expression of Father. Mm. Some people like to make it akin to other things that we use, and I don't even know if we can translate that very well, but we can understand the meaning is this is an affectionate way. And sometimes when I look at my children, we use nicknames. I think that each one of them has at least 5 to 10 nicknames, but yet they all know them and they all have meaning, actually. They have meaning behind those names.
And they like them. You know, I watch my husband. I don't think he ever says the names of our grandchildren or even me, really. You know, he has his nicknames for me and they love it. Just his silly little nicknames for them. It's just... it's endearing.
Oh, we had a granddaughter that said, why do you call me Peanut? and it was a funny thing is we didn't really know why that was, but she goes, oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. But why do you call me Peanut? You know, and it's just because it's an affectionate experience, but she does love it in that context.
My son-in-law has always called my daughter Queenie. just a very affectionate term. Well, her, she has twin two-year-olds, and just the other day, one of them said, "Queenie, come and get this." And he was calling her Queenie because he knew that was an affectionate term that his daddy used for his
mom.
Sweet. It was pretty sweet.
That's sweet. And you know, when you bring this up, it's kind of funny of the way that it works is those who are on the inside or allowed inside intimacy, when they use affectionate terms like that, it's appropriate. When individuals who may not have become in or in use those terms, it just seems awkward and odd. It doesn't have the same power. Same word, same letters, same pronunciation perhaps, but not the same meaning, because once again, as I just wanted to emphasize this, is sometimes we mistake is a tool of affection as the end result, and it's not really the end result. It's a vehicle to the intimacy. And so I've had some people who have heard a nickname my wife uses for me, which is, I don't know, I want to say private. It's intimate. Automatically, some people start to say, well, what could that be? This is getting a little weird and awkward. It's actually not. But they heard my wife calling me this, and they started calling me that. And I thought, wait a second, you shouldn't be calling me that, because that's what my wife calls me, and only she calls. Once again, it's the same word, but it's the intimacy that's involved with it, and it's a connection there. And so when we recognize this, there's great power in this. A great, great power. So when we talk about the divine experiences, I just love this. Once again, I think it illustrates some of the points we were talking about of connecting. I love the fact that our Father in heaven, in some ways, for some individuals, seems so distant. But yet he's not so distant, actually. And through an intimate experience, which we call prayer, which it can be a very affectionate expression, we become connected again. And our Father in heaven encourages us to have those experiences. He connects himself, and the Savior does in so many ways. That's why the atonement is so immeasurably wonderful. It is a personal connection. It is actually a sign of affection that brings an intimacy in no other way.
Well, the word itself, atonement, at one moment, you know, that.
I like that a lot. That. Nicely mm-hmm. said, is because mm-hmm. that is not just a loose connection. It is two individuals coming together in a very, I'll just use the word, sacred or a holy way. I think that's so great. Mm-hmm. I think of the Doctrine and Covenants. Whenever I read the Doctrine and Covenants, one of my favorite parts is to read actually the headings to see where this revelation is intended to be given, or meaning to whom it is given. For example, Section 4, how many missionaries have memorized Section 4? And we think of it as the missionary section. This was actually given to Joseph Smith in behalf or for his father. And so the field is white and it's all ready to harvest. And I just, every time I read that, I can almost not help but get choked up, because it's an intimate wording, because Joseph, a senior at that time, 58 years old, his profession was spent mostly in farming wheat. And so here's this beautiful situation where father comes to son and says, what would the Lord have me do, son? He says, well, let me go ask. And so he receives this revelation. And yet that revelation, in my opinion, is just dripping with intimacy and affection. Is, let me tell you what I would like you to do, but I'm going to tell you in a way that you will get. You're a wheat farmer. You've been around the block. Let
sweet.
Me tell you. I mean, and when you read these sections, it's so wonderful.
So tender.
It is. So with that in mind, I think of, we watch the Savior in the way that he expresses affection in so many wondrous ways, and our Father in heaven connecting us to him. We surely can be more like them and learn to use our words, our service, our touch, our spiritual aspects in ways that can bring people in closer.
One of the ones I look forward to the most is found in Revelations 20, verse 4, where it talks about God wiping the tears from our eyes. To me, that is a very intimate thing, because you don't do that for everyone. Only those that are closest and that mm-hmm. you love. You wouldn't dare reach out and touch somebody's face and wipe a tear away unless you were mm-hmm. very close with that person.
Mm. That's so good. And also, I'm going to build on this, because you are saying things that are so good. It's just causing my brain to whirl here, and I'm learning so much. It also is a very intimate experience to allow someone to wipe your tears.
There you go.
That's right.
And so we see
that's
that.
Right. Instead of pushing away.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. Don't touch me. Wait. You don't understand my pain. Yeah. You have no idea to come in, because this is an intimate, a private mm-hmm. zone in a way. And it is an affectionate gesture. But I think that we receive intimacy as well and learn to allow ourselves to receive that intimate expression when it is, I don't want to say earned, but when it is appropriate and experienced.
That's right.
Now, with that in mind, then, as we start to talk about this, we have a divine model, and I like this this modeling going on. Is I think that we have a responsibility to, once again, is to learn to understand how this is working, recognize how affection is taking place, and then to implement that. So give me some ideas of other ways. We've talked about words, expressing words. We've talked about touch. Are there any other ways that we can look at affection to give a category maybe to help us frame this of so we can recognize, oh, that's affection?
Sometimes just time, just giving time.
This is so good. Tell me a little bit more about this or give me an example or something.
Well, you know, I just think couples or even with your children, I just think we need to spend time together. In this busy, hectic world, just spending private time to talk. I used to tell my husband, you don't need to take me to Hawaii or any exotic place. You don't need to buy me big, wonderful things. Just talk to me deep. Just talk to me and tell me your dreams and your hopes and listen to my dreams and my hopes and let's talk about our dreams and our hopes. And those moments were priceless to me, are priceless to me.
And they take time. It
and
takes
they
time
take
to
time.
Tell. You know, it's interesting is a recent study just came out just within the last 2 weeks talking about this was specifically a research study on males and fathers and their children. And they were finding that children would much rather have time with their father than to have an event with their father. And this is what triggered this memory, Cheryl, is when you're saying, you don't have to take me to Hawaii. And there, here's children, teenagers that are saying, you don't have to take me somewhere great. If you want to just go and play catch in the backyard, give me the time. And so it might not even be the catch part. It's give me some of your time. And that's all I care about is I just want to be with you. Mm-hmm.
I remember a talk that Elder Marvin J. Ashton gave years ago, and he told about a friend of his who came home at the end of the day, and he pats his son on his head, and he says, oh, I love you so much, son. And the son says, well, I don't care if you love me. What I really want you to do is just play football with me. You know, time was important to him.
I was just going to, and another example of that was a talk that Elder Richard G. Scott gave in conference about how his wife, Janine, would slip little notes into his scriptures or into things, and then he'd read them, and they were tender.
What about his dots that he did for her?
The story I was going to bring up. When you told that story, he punched out 100 little dots with, you know, this little
paper punch,
and then he wrote a word on each one and put it in the envelope to give to her, and he thought she'd think it was so funny. But after she died and he was going through her personal things, she had pasted each one of those 100 dots on a piece of paper. And he realized how much it meant to her because he knew how much the things she did for him meant to him.
That's so good, and I think that that's a wonderful example of connection because connection was made. So expression received, and two individuals connected or become more intimate in that experience. That's so wonderful. I think when we talk about these experiences, once again, is if nothing else, but just recognition and understanding of the expansive elements of way affection is expressed, I think that can help in any relationship. I think of individuals who say, I don't think my parents ever really loved me. You know, they never told me that they loved me. And while I think we see this from our prophets, seers, and revelators, it is important to express and is important to use affection appropriately to make those connections. In some cases, when I talk to these individuals, tell me a little bit about your relationship then. Did you love them? Yes, I did. How did you tell them? Well, sometimes. Did you ever show them? What do you mean show them? Did you ever express your love? And did they ever express their love in ways that now if you think about it, you're like going, oh my goodness. For example, I remember one student saying, it wasn't until we started talking about this that I realized my dad actually was a very affectionate person. And I go, what do you mean by that? Well, whenever I come home from college, he would always, after we got settled, he would always say, do you want to go outside in the garage and work on the car with me? And they were restoring this old truck. And she said, Dad, I really don't want to work on the car. Why would I work on the car? She didn't know anything about engines. She said, after I started thinking about this in this conversation that affection is an expression of feeling, I realized he was actually being very affectionate, saying, do you want to work on the car? Because no one else ever got to work on that car with him. And she said, it dawned on me that he was expressing in his way, I sure love you, and you are special, and you are different than other individuals. Come and do this activity. But she missed it for most of her life because she didn't recognize there were different ways to express affection that would bring about intimacy. And she says, now I realize my dad actually was loving and affectionate in his way.
That reminds me of my own dad. He, not necessarily that he expresses it that way. He would write letters and things. But the thing that was most affectionate that he did for me, it seems like he was always a bishop or always always gone. But he always made a point of coming in at night when he'd get home and sitting on the edge of my bed. And what he did to connect was he'd usually bring down his latest concoction, some kind of drink, some kind of fruit juice that he'd combined together. They were usually awful, but it was his way of connecting and saying, I love you and you're important to me.
You know what's kind of fun is, I don't even know if this is interconnected, but you had that experience. And then your husband, you mentioned, made you a smoothie.
I thought, well, there we go.
There's something about this receiving.
That must be it.
Well, I just love this is when you start to think and you're like going, wow, these are interesting connections of the way that we are able to recognize, receive, and connect in different ways. And we mentioned this is in many ways when you were talking about Queen, you know, the nickname of Queenie is children learn affection from the examples that are around them. And so do couples, by the way. Adults can learn this. Once again, this is a skill that can be learned.
And not only that, but I don't think we realize how much security there is for a child when they see their parents. I remember just my father would daily put his arms around my mother and express his love. And we saw that. And the security I felt, it made me feel loved.
Oh, I agree 100%. I remember when my dad would take my mom in his arms and they'd start to dance. Or when he'd sit on the piano bench. My mom loves to play the piano and he'd sit next to her and he'd sing what she's playing. And those were two of the most affectionate things I ever remember.
Oh, this is so good. I can't help but think of a quote, and maybe we can just end this segment, believe it or not, as we are out of time. I cannot believe it, and we're just getting started, and I'm getting more and more excited to hear more about how affection and intimacy couple together. But I thought maybe this would be an appropriate thought just perhaps to close on this episode, and then on our next one, we can explore other ways and that we've recognized intimacy and growing affection within our relationships. C.S. Lewis said a quote, and I admire C.S. Lewis's writing, and I've learned so much, but he said this, and I like this quote. He says, I do not for a moment question that affection is responsible for 9/10 of whatever solid and durable happiness there is in our natural lives. Now, I don't know if he did a research study to come up with the 9/10, but as I listen to you talking and as I listen to our conversation as we've been doing and I reflect upon affectionate and intimate experiences, it is a large portion, perhaps 9/10, if maybe not more, of those things that are lasting. They're connected with experiences of being intimate with individuals appropriately. And I think that's a wonderful model for us. And so I look forward to our next conversation. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.